Hey, everybody, you're listening to Into the Dark. Before we get started, just to remind you, we've got a Patreon campaign going on right now. If you want to contribute to this radio station and help us keep the lights on, go to radiofreebrooklyn.com/pledge. All right, I'll see you guys after the theme music. Welcome to Into the Dark.
Skeptic among believers, and the believer among skeptics.
Are you a good witch or a bad witch?
Who are the witches?
Magic, necromancy, and witchcraft.
Wake up! They're all about you! All around you!
They're not all these evil.
The often heroic world of the witch.
The journalist with an inside knowledge of witchcraft.
It's a sex thing deep down, of course.
Hey, everybody, welcome to Into the Dark. We have a very exciting show for you today because we are going to be talking to Frederick Steinman about astrology. I feel like I've been saying your name 15 different ways. How do you prefer that last name coming out?
Well, I love the way you say it, you know, with the German, because I actually kind of grew up around here when it was like a German neighborhood, but Steinman is the proper pronunciation.
All right. I might accidentally slip into a more German form of that as the day goes on, just because I did Friday night come from where they were celebrating a Krampusnacht, which apparently had some troubles. We're also going to be dealing with a listener question that came in about house spirits, but that's later on. So let's just get into like basics. I feel like a lot of people, all they really know about astrology is that if they look at a newspaper, there will be horoscopes for their signs. And I mean, what process creates these? Like, how do you look at, say, what the stars are doing and what the planets are doing and sort of turn that into a projection of what is to come for a lot of people?
Okay. Well, that's a tough question. Give me a moment here. I'd say what separates it, or what glues the astrological map for any individual in any life is the time and the place that you're located. You know, it's like people, just before we went on air, the prior show, we were having a conversation about house cusps. Not house cusps, being born on the cusp of Taurus and Gemini. And I'm like, well, that's not true. You know, your sun's either in Taurus or it's in Gemini. There's no in between. And the time and the location of when you're birth, of when you take that first breath, that expresses the full potential of your natal map. And it, because whatever sign is rising on the east, that's your ascendant sign, and that's kind of your window to look into the world. Like the ascendant sign in esoteric astrology is actually more important than the sun and the moon. The rising sign tells like, what are you projecting? What your physical body is. Like, I'm a Scorpio rising, and Scorpio's known for what? Sex, death, taboos, the occult. And that's kind of been my life. Like, I walk around and I just kind of shock people. And, you know, Scorpio's always the sign that sees underneath the surface and is like not afraid to be like, oh, what's underneath this tablecloth? And people would smack my hand growing up, like, what are you doing? You're not supposed to do that.
So, just to like get like super basics. So when you're talking about this ascendant window, like what physical thing are we talking about? Like, is this just a section of the sky when you're born, or sure, what the sky looks like when you're born?
Here's a map. I pulled up the map of, let me get closer to the mic, of the chart for this show.
Oh, for like right now?
Yeah, for right now, exactly. And what's rising on the east is 21 degrees Gemini. So if a baby's born right now, 29 degrees Gemini is going to be rising in the east, and that's going to say what this baby is looking through the window. It's 29 Gemini, and Gemini is a very communicative and expressive sign. Very, you know, it rules the hand. So like writers, speakers, teachers, and then you'd want to look where Mercury, and especially right now, if there's a baby born now, Mercury is about to go retrograde tomorrow morning at 5:55 in the morning, Eastern Standard Time, and it's conjunct Pluto. And Pluto is a sign, is a planet, sorry, that is the lord of the underworld. So this person who's born at this exact moment of this show cuts through all the bullshit with whatever they got to say. They're going to get underneath and say what has to be said, even though nobody would probably like what they have to say.
So, okay, so like anyone who was born in this studio during this show would be a hard-hitting truth teller. Okay, so I'm just going to call right now because we are live. If you are about to give birth and you want these qualities for your child, feel free to come in. We will interview you on air, but we do not have... I don't have any medical training, really. Do you have any medical training?
Well, I have... I was present for both of my children's birth. I would kind of know...
I mean, it's like riding a bike, right?
It's kind of... You're like, okay, it's pretty basic. It's like, all right, just keep them alive and stop the bleeding, stuff like that. But you wait until more people qualified can come in and help out.
So just hearing you say, like, keep them alive and stop the bleeding, like, those are the first two tracks on my upcoming hardcore album. but, yeah, okay, enough of this tomfoolery. So, okay, so this influence of when you're born and, like, the position of these various planetary bodies when you're born, that will just carry forward for the rest of your life, or will that interact on sort of a daily basis with what's going on in the stars?
I would say both. You know, right before we came, we were talking about Alan Leo, and something Alan Leo said, or like the stars. What does he say? He says so many good quotes here. Let me just give me a moment to say a good one.
Sure.
You know, the stars compel, but ultimately it's character that's your destiny, and your horoscope is just your potentials.
Okay, so like you're leaning more in that direction, but you can fight against that lean.
Of course, you know, and that's where, you know, before the planet, you know, old-time astrologers, it was more fated because they didn't have these outer planets where, that they would understand it. Like, it was, the planets were as far as you could see, and once Saturn, let's say, was doing something nasty to your moon or your sun, it's like, oh boy, you might not make it past this one. But back then, if you think about it, the technology wasn't up there. And then Uranus, when the planet Uranus came about, we had the Revolutionary War. Man had this idea that it's like, I could be free. And then that was predicated by the Industrial Revolution, where a tremendous amount of growth happened. And like right now, like I forget the exact math, but the amount of information that comes out and the amount of innovation with technology is ridiculous. It's like unprecedented how fast things are obsolete because things are being innovated so quickly.
I'm really glad you brought up history, because there's something I've been meaning to ask you that we talked about very briefly, but only in so much as I said there's a question that might be coming and refused to let you answer it before we were in front of a hot mic. So I was reading this book a while back by Laura Ackerman Smaller about Pierre Dali, who was a French astrologer in I think the 1400s, who was also a big member of the Catholic Church. And part of what that book points out is that astrology was considered part of standard training for Catholic clergy for a long time. Like, it was very much accepted and promoted by the church, and now I feel like there's some sort of separation between those two things. Like maybe even around the time that Alan Leo came out with like sort of a, I guess some people, what would you call him? Like the founder of modern astrology? Is that too much?
No, that's accurate. I would say he's definitely a pioneer of modern astrology. Yeah, the founder of it.
So, I mean, where did that, like, so, like, he's sort of operating outside of, arguably, mainstream kind of religious stuff.
Who, Alan Leo?
Yeah.
Well, Alan Leo is an interesting guy. He was a theosophist, actually, and a theosophist would actually try to synthesize many different types of beliefs to show that, hey, you know, you're praying to Krishna, you're praying to Buddha, we're praying to Jesus Christ, we're all kind of doing the same thing, and here's why.
Okay. So how do we get from, say, someone like Pierre Dali, where it's very much sort of like this is like a form of Catholic teaching to some extent, to that more sort of wide sweeping idea? Or am I just like characterizing this completely incorrectly? How would you say is like the relationship between, say, I don't know, the Catholic Church and astrology right now? Or what's your impression thereof, not being a member of the Catholic clergy, I think, right? You're not wearing a collar.
No, definitely not. Definitely not a member of the Catholic clergy. All right, this is, you know, it's a great question. You know, something that I have a lot to say about this. There's a lot of passion here. I think that's a good word for it. Because what I first started noticing when I started studying astrology, that there's a lot of astrological references and allegories that gave me a deeper understanding of the Bible. And I wondered that too. And so I've philosophized. I'm like, you know, what could possibly be the reason for this split? You know, because clearly astrology's in the Bible, in certain places. Like, for example, they talk about Job 38:10, I believe, where they start talking about, can you bind the sweet influence of the Pleiades and can you loosen Orion's belt, which is a very, you know, like, how did I come to terms with this one? That it's like, this is just complex stuff, and I've kind of got to jump somewhere else to think about this, or to bring it down to earth. Where it's like, God is saying, like, can you wrestle with your nature to be able to make these influences within your horoscope work?
Yeah.
You know, and I read that, I'm like, oh, okay. But I got sidetracked. Oh, hold on. The question was this split. Okay.
Yeah.
It's like any sort of abuse of power, I feel. Like right now we have a debate about banning guns.
Yeah.
You know, in astrology, you know, the astrologer who doesn't apply, let's say, what he's teaching to others, he doesn't practice what he preaches to others, you know, has a potential to just be an overpowerful, tyrannical force, like influencing people behind the throne, and people get scared. It's like, hey, this guy could tell me when I die, and then if he's not coming from the right place, he's going to make a lot of enemies. And then it's going to be just ostracized. It's like, hey, this just doesn't work. This is, it's not safe. These guys are out of control. Let's push them out. Let's start someone else. It's almost kind of like a witch hunt.
Yeah.
But they might have had a cause, or they might not have. You know, I wasn't around back then. I've never read anything about it, but it's like any abuse of power. Like, it's a very vulnerable thing, I found. Like, when you go into somebody, to an astrologer who just knows your chart and kind of you inside and out,
yeah,
to be able to kind of just shed yourself and be like, all right, here's where I'm at. And they could really do harm if they don't do work on themselves. Because anybody who comes to see you for like an astrological reading,
yeah,
I find, you know, there's like a law of attraction involved with it, where it's like, oh, I've got to read for someone. They've got similar issues to me, and I've got to make sure to separate my issues from them, because you're playing with like God's geometry.
Yeah. That's okay. So like, this is very, it's weird though, because like, hearing you talk about this, like, this is serious stuff. This is like high stakes stuff. But then like, my introduction to astrology was, like I said, like, you know, I'd pick up the horoscope in like the local newspaper growing up, and that always seemed kind of like clearly this is like, they made it seem more like, I don't know, like a parlor trick, or like a fun little thing. Whereas this, I mean, like, hearing you talk about it, like, it's clear that this is a bigger deal than all of that.
Yeah, well, I would say that, you know, I was on Wall Street for 10 years, and people got to put meals on the table. I'd say, you know, put food on the table. Their kids got to eat.
Yeah. Was Wall Street before or after you started, like, studying astrology?
Before. Yeah, definitely before. And I, like, towards my end of my tenure, I started getting more into, like, metaphysical concepts and ideas.
So what actually brought you into astrology? Because it does seem like it did happen sort of later in life. Not that you're old or anything, but just, like, you know. You were clearly an adult, unless they have children on Wall Street, which I wouldn't be surprised.
No, I was definitely an adult, and it was kind of by accident, where everything in my life just went to hell. Like, literally, like, I couldn't do what I used to do anymore. I was in a very, very bad car accident where my dad ran over me, broke both of my legs. And I was, like, on the brink of death. Like, they didn't think, the doctors came in at me, and everyone who looked at me, they thought I was going to die. And I was just like, oh, I'm going to be fine. And I would make a joke, and everybody would laugh, and be like, I don't know what the hell's up with this guy. But I just knew I was going to live.
Yeah.
And, but I had to, like, really, it would have almost been easier to die, because I had to, like, literally retrain myself how to walk. I, Like, I had to get myself off of Percocets. And so I started getting into holistic healing and through acupuncture because I was so desperate to just not be in excruciating agony all the time.
Yeah.
I'm like, all right, I gotta try something. Even though like this is how skeptical I was, I'm like, all right, there's no way somebody putting tiny little pins into me is going to alleviate this pain. Like, look at this pain. This is real pain. This isn't real science, real medicine. And after my first few treatments, I'm like, oh, wow, I feel better. This works. And then from there, gradually led into meditation, where I started to notice where thoughts and my emotional state would affect my pain.
Yeah.
And from there, I started picking up the tarot, and then, like, the tarot cards had all sorts of astrological symbols on them. And then I read somewhere that you could time tarot events if you knew the astrological structure of the tarot deck. And then I started studying astrology, and I'm like, oh, wow, I'm even better at astrology than tarot. And I forgot to mention that when I started doing tarot. Like, the first thing that happened with my tarot deck, I did, like, a few readings for myself, and they all said, yeah, everything in your life is going to die. Like, and I'm like, oh, okay.
Cool!
Yeah, but I innately knew that, hey, you know, death is the opportunity for a new rebirth, because I knew things just weren't working.
Right.
You know, it's a Scorpio rising in me. Scorpios are always dying and being reborn every day.
So, when you mention that you could sort of time events that you saw in the tarot using astrology, you would see a card and you'd be like, this is in the future, but you'd be able to sort of more, be able to pinpoint more when that would?
Exactly. Like, I did an astrotarology. Oh, I just made that up, but it's a good one.
Astrotarology. That's what we're going to name this episode later. It's just astrotarology with Frederick Simon.
Yeah, this astrotarology course last week at Catland about how to use astrology to better anchor your tarot practice. And I did, like, a past, present, and future example for the class with Trump. And with the future card, you know, I pulled a card that related very much to the transit of Saturn in the last 10 degrees of Sagittarius, which is where Donald Trump's moon is at 21 degrees Sagittarius, and his sun's also at 22 degrees Gemini. So it's like, oh, this is pretty spot on. It's like, this is something this guy's going to have to contend with very much in the near-term future. And it says, okay, this future card that came up, which was the Ten of Wands, is going to be from December, I forget the exact dates, but, like, forgive me here, December 19th to December 20th until December 18th of next year. So it's like, okay, this next time is going to be having these Ten of Wands type issues.
So what type of issues would those be?
Okay, let me see if I remember. Come up with a new universal philosophy, which is going to be very hard for him. You know, he's so egocentric, and it's made him very successful so far, but I'd imagine that everything that he's done in the past isn't going to work doing this.
So that's going to be his big task for, like, this upcoming year as the first year as our president, provided that something crazy doesn't happen tomorrow when the electors do their thing. Actually, you wrote an interesting piece about the election.
Sure.
That I'm actually going to quote from now.
Okay.
I'm just going to ambush you with you with your own words, but in a positive way, because I like them, so don't, this is not a, but you said, we are still in a Piscean age, so Piscean lessons still hold water for all humanity. With the moon in Pisces, we will do good to reflect on the meaning of the sign of Pisces and its purpose for humanity. Specifically, out of suffering comes greater humility, compassion, and wisdom. And you wrote that, I think, the day after the election?
Yeah, I did. And I liked what you did with Pisces. You know, you almost made them like an Islamic faction right there.
Oh,
the sign of Pisces.
Right. Or I mean, like, you know, the what is it, the Greek god of rain? Or Isis?
Isis is...
Was that Roman? Is that Egyptian? I'm making all this up.
Isis, I think, is like the Egyptian, like, divine. She's almost like the Egyptian Juno, I think, or the Egyptian Hera. You know, like the Queen of Heaven, I believe.
Okay. And anyone who's incredibly angry at us, if we are, in fact, wrong about this, feel free to reach out on Twitter and all caps, just all caps.
please.
So it seems like astrology is a good way of putting sort of things into perspective. in terms of like current events and also things just relating to yourself. Is there like what are some practical ways that people can sort of use astrology to better sort of like live their lives, approach conflicts correctly, anticipate potential problems, that sort of thing?
Okay, this is how I would do it. Like, you just buy an astrology book. You know, there's so many good ones. My teacher, Alan Oaken, has really, really good astrology books. Like, the one I learned off of was Complete Astrology. And you pull up your chart on astro.com, get your date of birth, time of birth, and location of birth, put your chart in, and then just start reading, what does my sun mean in this sign and house combination? And start to say, is that true for me or is that not true for me? And then go through all the planets, look for the aspects, and see how you can improve on yourself. It'll look at the blind spots in your life and make them strengths. You know, back to like the Piscean things, you know, you turn your wounds into wisdom. You know, acknowledging your pain and saying, okay, I feel this pain, and the pain I find could be a great teacher.
Yeah. How important is the time of your birth? Because I think a lot of people don't actually know when during the day they were born. I mean, I don't, for one. So maybe I'm just projecting onto everyone else my problems, which is part of the joy of the parasocial relationship of radio. But, like, is that, like, if you had that, like, if you're off by, say, 6 hours, like, you ballparked it, and you're like, I was born probably, like, after midnight, more or less. Like, is that going to have, like, a huge effect on your ability to have an accurate...
Absolutely, yes.
Okay.
6 hours is a huge, huge difference. You know, and for some people, 5-10 minutes could be a huge deal, because, like, let's say somebody thinks they're born at, like, the end of a 29-degree Virgo ascendant, but they're actually born 5 minutes later with a 0-degree Libra ascendant or a 1-degree Libra ascendant, and that was huge. It's like, okay, because... whoever rules your ascendant rules your whole horoscope, and then whatever that planet does, and if they're involved in major aspect configurations to key angular positions of your house, of your horoscope, then your timing of significant events, changes in life are just going to be off. And especially if you're paying somebody to read your horoscope for you, you're just pissing money away. You're just burning it away. This is like the... it's like the old Jewish guy in me, the old Jewish Capricorn Brooklyn New Yorker. You're just throwing your money away. You might as well just burn your $100, $200 away you spend for astrologer at that point. You know, you got to have an accurate birth time.
Okay, that's good to know. So heads up, guys. All right. Well, we've been talking for a bit. We should probably get to this reader question before we forget. I keep saying reader because I forget it's a radio show. You're listening to Radio Free Brooklyn, by the way, Into the Dark. If you have a listener question to submit to our research department, by all means, send that to intothedarkrfb@gmail.com, and we will try our very darndest to answer that. And so today's question is, Into the Dark, on a past episode, the person you were interviewing mentioned a house spirit at Catland Books and suggested that there may be spirits in every house. Can you go more into that? I don't understand. Thank you for this question. Super great question. So, Catland Books, there has been much talk about there being a little spirit, a little furry thing there. Have you seen this? Because you've done stuff at Catland.
No, I have not seen a furry spirit there, no.
I was there a few weeks ago and I saw a rat, but like that was just that wasn't paranormal. It was just, it was cute too. It was like one of the brown ones. You never see brown ones. But there's a rich tradition in especially Western, Eastern, and Northern Europe about believing that there are spirits in houses, that it's suggested that maybe the first person to die in every new house is going to become the spirit of that house, or that simply having anywhere that there's an enclosed space where someone has put up a fire is going to have a spirit there. But then there are sort of different traditions in different places. So, for example, in Latvia, there are the puckies, which might take the form of a bird, owl, salamander, or a salamander, and like can actually, there are some places where the house spirit will appear as a cat or some other sort of vaguely furry thing. So there's something called a butter cat that people will talk about, that is basically a house spirit that will steal cream from the cows of your neighbors and put it into your sort of cream-holding receptacle. So you'll think you're doing great, but really someone's just stealing on your behalf. That's actually an interesting tradition I kept coming across. House spirits everywhere, at least in the European tradition, seem to be related to stealing things from your neighbors and giving them to you, which is a good way to get into some kind of trouble. There are also different interesting ways to sort of appease your house spirit. So, for example, in Baltic countries, it's traditional to take a child's the first set of teeth, the baby teeth, and when they come out, throw them behind the oven and say to the house spirit, which there is thought to take the form of a cricket, "Cricket, take these tooth of bone and give me one of iron." I don't know what that... I assume that's like a money kind of thing, maybe?
What did he say? Give me a tooth of bone and...
So, like, you throw the baby teeth over to the back of the oven, and you're like, take...
Oh, whose baby teeth are you throwing?
I assume ones that have come out on their own, I would hope.
Okay, like baby teeth of the children in the house, not baby teeth of some animal or anything.
Yeah, I think it has to be, like, kids'
of the house.
Teeth.
Okay.
I mean, that makes some sort of sense, right? Because, like, if the house and the family... are deeply intertwined, like making a sacrifice of some sort of part of the family, genetically. Though it is sort of, I mean, like, it's sort of like the tooth fairy, I guess.
And yeah, and if you think about it too, you're kind of telling these spirits to, like, dude, move on. We got young generations now, you know, you got to clear space up in here to let us all grow.
I mean, it's interesting because, like, there are some places where it's like you need to, like, if they, especially if, like, the spirit has been angered by you, like, you need to do something to appease them. But there's some understanding also that, like, there's a spirit in the land. I'm trying to find out. I need to, like, look at my notes because there's a tradition in somewhere, I think in Eastern or Northern Europe, where the basic premise is that any piece of land is sort of inhabited by a spirit. And when you build a house over that land, you have to make a sacrifice to the spirit somehow, usually by burying something under where the front sort of door jam is going to be. And that's a way of indicating that you are sort of paying the spirit for the use of the property, but the understanding is the spirit is still sort of the landlord and still has a certain amount of control. So they're like, there's stories of, like, people who have to, like, wake up because they aren't allowed to sleep where they are because the spirit won't let them sleep there because it's sort of taken a shine to that particular part of the house.
You know, it's kind of interesting. I was actually I grew up most of my life in Douglaston, New York, and Douglaston was born on an Indian burial ground. And I remember when I was, like, maybe 14, 15 years old, I found a bone in my front yard, and I like, it looked like a bone about this big, like probably a thigh bone or maybe a femur bone or a big animal. And I brought it up to my mom, and I'm like, "Mom, what is this?" And she's like, and my mom is like skittish, I guess. She's like, "Oh, it's nothing. Don't worry about it."
But then she, like, took it from you and buried it somewhere? Or?
No, we just left it there. And it always sat wrong with me. But then, like, coincidentally, like 12, 13 years later, this house, probably 20 feet away, is where I got both of my legs broken. And I'm like, wow. You know, like,
yeah.
You know, talking about house spirit. And I always felt that my house growing up was haunted. Like, I've seen, like, crazy things in my house where... like a doorknob, I heard like a doorknob, like bang, like something like that, and I wake up the next day, the doorknob is dented.
Like, and like, was there anybody in the house when this happened?
There are people sleeping.
But like, this was the middle of the night.
Yeah, it's just like 2-3 in the morning, and it's like, it's just so noisy over there. I was like, I can't even go to sleep in my parents' house anymore. Like, I close my eyes. And I don't know if it's I've gotten more sensitive or in tune to these things, but I hear all these voices, like, talking shit to me. And I'm like, guys, just get the hell out of here. I'm like, leave me alone.
I mean, that's, that can be really scary stuff. Somebody sent in a question that's sort of related to how do you get ghosts out of your house a while back. And, like, we can talk about that after at length if you want to. But anybody who's listening, go to I think it's the last episode, actually. So it's the episode that's called Demon Sex. And there's some talk there about getting ghosts out of your house. Very academic episode. Talked to a visiting professor at Yale about sex with demons. I was very excited about that. So part of this also ties in the idea that, like, the house is a very magical space in a lot of ways. Well, like, certain portions of the house are related to certain kinds of magic. So, like, spirits are often drawn to, like, the fire or the hearth or the oven, but also protection stuff usually involves the roof. So it was thought in some cultures that if you throw the bloody skin of a cow over the roof, it'll prevent a witch from coming in. Or if you thought you were being... I have to check my notes about which culture this was, but I think it might have been in Italy or Latvia, that if you thought you were being cursed, the thing to do was to go to the butcher shop and, without saying a word, buy the heart of a cow pay whatever it costs, go somewhere else, get some nails, still not saying a word, drive nails into the heart of the cow, and then hang it in from your like the top beam of your roof. And as it dries, supposedly it will dry out the efficacy of that witch or wizard who is cursing you. So something about, and like there are all these sort of stories of like, you know, if you want to see what the year will be like for you, you should go up to the roof and like use a sword to carve a circle around you and then sort of hang out in that all night or something like that on, I think, St. Bernard's Day. I need to actually look at my notes because I'm doing a lot of vague things, but back to astrology for a second. So you've been doing this for a number of years now, and it seems like astrology can really help get a better handle on tarot. Have you seen the reverse is true? Also, like, can tarot help make astrology more useful?
Oh, absolutely. When I was reading at Catland about a month ago, and somebody came in for a reading. They're like, oh, I want a reading. I'm like, okay, give me your birth time. And they're like, oh, I want a tarot reading. I'm like, all right, you know, I know tarot. I'm like, I just need your astrology information as well, and you could pull cards, and then you start identifying, you know, the cards, especially if somebody's coming for you quick, for like a quick reading.
Yeah,
you could pull a few cards and it'll tell you where to look in the chart of this is something that needs to be discussed at this time.
Okay. So when you are sort of doing readings for yourself, do you rely more on astrology or more on tarot? Which one do you find is more useful? Or do you just throw them both out at the same time?
Okay, this is a good question. I guess both. You know, I used to have a practice where I would pull a tarot card for myself a day.
Okay.
And just reflect on that card a day. And then especially I would look at my astrology chart of where that is. But then I'm always being mindful of my astrology transits as well. Like last night, for example, I pulled up a chart. Like I'm always pulling up like this. I've got a great app on the iPhone, Time Passages. And I always look up the transits, seeing what's going on, what's being activated, what's rising in the east. And I saw Mars was about to make a square to my natal Uranus. And that is like a sudden accident. Something is going to blindside me out of nowhere. And my wife and I were walking home from a restaurant. And I told her, I'm like, slow down. There's ice. Be careful. And then I'm like, okay. She's like going off, you know, because she's a full-on Taurus, Virgo rising, and she's just like, I don't want to hear that. I know how to protect my kids. Don't tell me any of this. But then when we go home, and I'm like, how it manifested itself, where we watched Passion of the Christ, and I've never seen that before. And talk about being blindsided.
Oh, yikes. Yeah.
Yeah, being blindsided by violence. I'm like, oh, that's how Mars square Uranus is playing it out. I'm like, okay, that's interesting. And then also on top of it, I forgot to set my, or at least look at my fantasy football lineup last night. And there was a game where a player I had was involved. So I kind of got blindsided there as well. So there was some blindsiding that was going to happen. I just didn't know exactly which way it was going to come from.
Right. Okay. So that's interesting. So do you think like a better reading of what just happened was like, you were able to, because you had this warning that Mars was square to Uranus, that you were able to avoid certain calamities knowing that one eventually was going to come? Or is it like if you had sort of stayed on your guard that whole time, you could have, I guess, I mean, you can't really do that much about the fantasy football guy, because I mean, that's out, you know, wherever sports are done.
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, and I feel, you know, when I saw Passion of the Christ on, I actually, you know, consciously was working. I'm like, this is a good way to work with this energy. I knew it was going to be upsetting. I knew it was going to be gory. But I knew, you know, wherever Uranus is involved, it's an opportunity to evolve or innovate one's perspective. So I'm like, okay, let me get a new perspective on this movie. There's going to be a lot of violence. It's going to scare the crap out of me, probably. Let me check it out. Because I was avoiding it for a long, long time. It was like growing up. I grew up in the Catholic Church. I don't know about you.
My upbringing is sort of complicated.
Okay. But I grew up Catholic, and we would watch these movies of Jesus getting crucified when we were like at a nice young age of 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. And every time he's there negotiating with Pontius Pilate, I think he's gonna get off. I always do. I'm like. But he never does. And I was talking to my wife about that. I'm like, I always think he's going to get off no matter what. But then he doesn't. And I, And I think that's part of why I was avoiding it. Just watching that gore and bloodshed, it's really upsetting and it's disturbing. And especially to force it on kids like that without any perspective, it's like, it's kind of messed up. And I remember when my oldest, my six-year-old, woke up and was like running around the house, and I actually stopped it, or I paused it so he couldn't see it, and put him back to bed, because I'm like, he doesn't need to see this stuff, you know, even though we bring him to a church, it's just stuff he doesn't need to see. You need to develop your mind to be able to understand the complexities of these like violent situations.
Yeah, I wonder. I mean, like, I'm not great with violence. Like, I went through a phase where I was trying to teach myself to be better at violence by watching horror movies. So I tried watching Hellraisers 1 and 2, and I don't know if that helped, honestly. Because, I mean, they're gory, and they're really... I mean, there's a point where some dude gets a drill in his head, and it's, like, picking him up off the ground, and it's just like, oh my god! But, like, I don't know. I feel like I'm just going to be as vulnerable to that forever. But back to astrology for a second. So, like, I guess one of the, like, therefore one of the practical uses of astrology would be that you could find, like, if an energy is coming your way, you can find a way to cause it to dissipate in a way that is more sort of optimal for you, like, rather than falling and breaking your leg. I mean, are there other, like, you see a movie that, like, is going to upset you. Do you have, like, other experiences that have been like that, where you're sort of, like, you made a choice based on the sort of the position of the planets at that time that you think really helped either like make a situation a lot better than it was going to be or like prevented a catastrophe from going down?
Okay. Here's another one. I was going through another tough, or challenging, I should say, Uranus transit, where Uranus, I knew it was going to impact everything within my chart. And Uranus is in my sixth house of work. So I knew it was going to be something with my job. And I just started a new job right before this transit, because my wife's like, you know, we need to bring in some extra income. I'm like, all right. I'm like, you know, the transits don't say it's the best, but you know, when Uranus is going through the chart, you know, it's like, God bless you.
Thank you.
It's, what's the word here? That when you've got transpersonal energies working on personal planet placements, there's only so much you can do. It's like, you got to kind of surrender and ask to work with it and cooperate with it as best as you can. And that means like you kind of got to bring in, you know, the higher self, the soul, you know, like you kind of got to say, okay, you know, this is going to be personally uncomfortable, but if I'm going to do this from my highest good and from a place of my soul, that I can live with that and I'll work with that outcome. You got to see a way out through that way, even though you're not going to understand exactly which way it's going to come, you know. So with this job, I started it right before this Uranus transit, and things were great. You know, I was like, oh, this is easy. You know, it works out well. I'm getting paid very well. But then it got to a point where I had to step up, and it was out of nowhere. I had to step up and assert myself, because it was like, all right, this is what you got to do. This is what you got to do. And I'm like, if this is what you want me to do, that's not really me. And, you know, when Uranus impacts the sun, it's an opportunity to individuate yourself as your true self of who I really am. And to do that, you've got to say no. So it was really, really, really uncomfortable as hell to tell a job where I like the people very much that this isn't for me.
Yeah.
And it was very uncomfortable, but saying no to that, new opportunities are coming my way as we speak.
Because you like stayed true.
Yeah, to stay true to, hey, I'm an astrologer, I'm an innovator, I'm somebody who thinks creatively, and if you box me in like that, you're just going to frustrate me. And then, you know, Uranus rules like electricity. What happens if you don't properly ground electricity? Short circuits, blows up. And then,
yeah,
like, you know, that's the choice. It's like, am I going to have to be uncomfortable with this personal discomfort, or am I going to wait and just repress and blow and wait for a huge blow up?
That seems like a really great example of just like not only using astrology to better know what choices to make, but also just to like better sort of examine who you are. Because like, I mean, the way I got into tarot when I first started was I didn't have any sort of sense like there's any real magical efficacy or anything like that going on at the time. Like I did it almost like because I was writing a paper about James Merrill, who's an American poet who used Ouija boards to write like a really long book of poems. Or like one poem that was like 100 pages long. and he was really into William Butler Yeats, who was an Irish poet who like did seances and had like supposedly like ghosts talk to him through his wife, and they're like, he's like, why are you here? And they're like, we're bringing you metaphors for your poems. I was like, I should take up tarot, I do poetry, cool. And like I started reading it, and like when I first started doing it, it was more like I'm doing this to read myself. Like if I see that the devil card comes up and I'm like, oh, that must be because of this, and that really just means that I'm concerned about that, and having to interpret that, like doing that work is helping me know myself. And I feel like that's something where like even for people who don't necessarily buy in to the influence of the stars and planets on them, they're like, at least you can use this to read yourself. I'm just saying that if you're skeptical right now and you're like, I don't know if I want to buy into this right now, give it a try anyway, just to see like what you can learn about you, even if you don't think you're learning about anything external, is what
and,
I'm saying.
And you know, I'll play the, you know, Capricorn is actually ruled by the devil tarot card, and I'll play the devil's advocate here, and I'll challenge anybody who doesn't believe in astrology to take up the task of trying to disprove it. And I also tell you that anybody who's tried to disprove astrology ended up practicing astrology. There was a French guy, I forget his name, it's not coming to me, but he set out to do like all this research to disprove astrology, uh-huh. And ended up proving it and then writing a bunch of books about people's astrology chart, like a lot of high level statistical analysis. I can't remember his name. I have the book at the house too.
Okay. I mean, you can also like, if you get a chance, like email me the title of that when you find out, and I'll just put it up on our website-y thing. So,
oh, perfect.
So everybody will know. So actually, that's it. So the idea of like an astrological sign being ruled by a tarot card. So is that sort of map on for, because there are more tarot cards, like there are more of those sort of higher echelon cards than there are astrological signs, right?
They're
exactly the same number, right?
Yeah, I think there is. There's 22 major arcana, there's 12 signs, and you've got 7 traditional planets, Sun, Moon, Mercury, Venus, Mars, Jupiter, Saturn, 3 transpersonal, Uranus, Neptune, and Pluto.
Okay, so
so it's 10. So you got 10 and you got 12, 22. It kind of works perfectly. Even though the 3 transpersonal, most people don't, or a lot of people don't attribute them to any planets, but I've seemed to find that they work. You know, the Fool just kind of works for Uranus. The Hangman seems to work for Neptune, and the Judgment or Aeon card works for Pluto.
Okay. If somebody wanted to like learn more about like mapping these things out, like, and like really this relationship, because there does seem to be so many like links, where would be a good place for them to look?
All right. I believe the Book of Thoth by Crowley.
Okay.
I think there that he lays out the structure for it. Where else? Yeah, that'd be a good place. Yeah, because he has everything there. He just doesn't map out the 3 transpersonal ones, because I don't think Pluto was discovered at that point.
Okay. Interesting. Oh, speaking of, actually, so something I've been meaning to ask you. This is going to feel sort of apropos of nothing, and it's kind of like less. So I've seen a lot of people on the internet say that because Mercury is in retrograde, they are behaving in a certain way. One, what does it actually mean when Mercury is in retrograde? And two, what kind of effect would that actually have on somebody?
Okay, I'm so glad you asked this, because you know, poor Mercury, he gets so much scapegoating. Especially, you know, right now Mercury's in Capricorn, and Capricorn's the sign of scapegoating, actually. There's a lot of stuff about, you probably grew up this way as a fellow Capricorn, where people blame you for things that aren't your fault.
I certainly blame you for things that aren't my fault.
Oh, yeah, that's another thing. Capricorns are very, very hard on themselves, too. They scapegoat themselves, they flog themselves.
Oh, yeah, fair amount of that. Yeah. Speaking of my complicated religious upbringing. Anyway, but, okay, but what is it? So when Mercury is in retrograde, what does that mean?
What's going on? So Mercury, like we said, rules communication, thought, travel,
He's the god of, I think, poets and liars, right?
Yeah, poets, liars, merchants. There you go. And right now, we live in New York. We live in a very capitalistic society. And when business doesn't go good, people get pissed off.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's like, I feel like there's an overemphasis on materialism in New York and business and commerce and being on time. So when things don't go your way, especially in the type of situations, let's blame Mercury, and it's just gotten popular to blame him. But you know, anytime Mercury causes a mix-up, and it's going to happen. You know, it's like, you know, you're going to get a pie in the face somewhere.
Yeah.
You got to have a sense of humor about it, and it's an opportunity to reevaluate the perspective based on the house that Mercury's transiting, any aspects that he's making to planets within your natal chart. Like, I saw, like, a few people, or I heard about a few people in just my daily interaction, you know, blaming Mercury retrograde when it wasn't even Mercury retrograde. And I spoke to the person, like, one person, I'm like, that's not Mercury, that's Saturn. I'm like, you're involved in, like, a very intense, heavy Saturn transit where, like, you just ran into a wall. They're like, oh, my God, that's exactly what happened. I'm like, yeah, you can't really blame Mercury yet, but, you know, there's, like, a hidden relationship between Mercury and Saturn right now because Mercury is going retrograde in Saturn's house. So if, especially if somebody's, like, Mercury ruled, which is, you know, if you've got your sun, moon, rising in Gemini or Virgo, and Mercury's going retrograde, and let's say if you've got planets being aspected by Mercury and or Saturn, and if both, you're going to be having a really, really hard time where you're going to want to, if you're a Gemini, you're going to want to talk your way out of a situation, and you're not going to be able to do it anymore.
Yeah.
And if you're a Virgo, it's like, all right, I'm just going to muscle my way through this with my work ethic, and that might not even be able to work anymore.
Where yeah.
It's like, you really, you know, like Saturn is the god of limitations. And, you know, if you're going through a Saturn transit, like the mantra is, you know, be grateful for delays, because Saturn is, he's somebody who also gets very much maligned in pop astrological talk that you see on, and like meme talk, meme speak you see on the internet. Like,
yeah.
F Saturn, or like people say silly things just to get a few likes. I don't even know what's out there, but, you know, Saturn's the great teacher. And he's going to put boundaries and limitations on you to show you what you have to learn, because it's a planet of mastery. It's like, and if you want to delve into the dark of the occult and transpersonal realms of Neptune, Uranus, and Pluto, you've got to show Saturn that, hey, I could sustain myself on Earth in a reasonable way first. That's all Saturn's trying to do. And based on that, it's where that test comes from in your life is what sign Saturn's in, what house placement, and what aspects he's making to any planets within the horoscope.
So a lot of people, when they talk about astrology, they sort of personify these planets a little bit. Like, they sort of talk about their natures as planets, but also as sort of deities of, like, the Roman or Greek pantheon. How do you feel about that sort of, like, relationship? Like, to what extent is, like, if you, when you think of Saturn, because, I mean, you were raised Catholic, like, when you think of Saturn, like, how, to what extent is that sort of a religious figure? To what extent is that just sort of like, this is a planet, the planet has certain properties that are beyond the sort of standard physics, like they are sort of vaguely supernatural properties, but it's still like just a planet in space. Like, where did those intermingle?
Wow, okay, well, let me see if I understand this question. Okay, I feel like most of what you said is true. You know, it represents, you know, Saturn could represent a traditional authority figure, it could represent a person, it could represent an idea of just authority, the state, the government, and the myths. You know, the myths are the planets. This is like a living, breathing tradition. You know, I was reading Joseph Campbell yesterday, and, you know, these stories are like a represented, like these archetypes in these myths, in these stories. They're our highest spiritual potentials playing out.
Okay. And
that's how I actually learned astrology so quick. I grew up, you know, you probably can't see this. We don't videocast this anymore. Right?
No.
Yeah, Cooper's wearing a Batman shirt, and I'm wearing a Green Lantern shirt. We didn't plan that out. And part of why I got so into astrology so quick is I just knew these myths and stories from so much comics.
Yeah.
So much knowing the myths. And then I'm like, oh, Saturn is kind of like Batman in a way.
You know, that's so fair.
Yeah, Saturn, like in the end of the second Batman movie, he's like, all right, I'm going to be the bad guy because Harvey Dent's got to be the good guy, even though he was really the bad guy, because people need something to believe in, and that's fine. And it could almost play out like Jebediah Springfield, too, from The Simpsons.
Where, oh, my gosh.
Yeah, you know, like another thing, like, Lisa, you can't do that. You can't ruin the people's myth, because once, like, the myth reaches, like, a collective mass, it kind of transcends itself. Like, I read an article yesterday on some website where they started kind of, you know, they like, this is where like the truth could get dangerous, or like where the facts could get kind of dangerous if you don't understand like the full context, where like of Gandhi, for example.
Yeah.
You know, Gandhi, was he perfect? No, but he did a lot of good, and he definitely had like a lot of, I was actually studying his horoscope with my teacher like about a month back, and I'm like, did Gandhi have like really like messed up sexual issues? And he's like, absolutely. Like, he had to like really work hard to like wrestle with his own nature, to like conquer his own sexual issues. And he had to stop having sex with his wife in order to sublimate the energies to be able to like, I guess use some, lack of a better term, you know, some sort of like to channel the sexual energy to India's liberation into his own, instead of his own animal gratification.
And like, you sort of were able to anticipate that from just reading his star chart.
What's that? Yeah, absolutely. I looked at it because, you know, I'm a Scorpio rising, so like sexual energy I could pick up on like almost too much. It's almost too much sometimes. I'm like, whoa. Which is why I'm so glad I'm married. I'm like, I don't even have to think about it. It's just like, I struggled with this for a while, and then finally, like, it hit me, I think, last year. It's like, oh, you know, my wife, it's like kind of like where Steve Jobs goes onto the stage and just wears the black shirt.
Okay.
You know, it's like, oh, perfect. One less thing to think about. I focus my energy somewhere else. But, you know, every now and then you might see like a new variation of a black shirt, but then it's just like, stop it. You know, that's, I kind of like wrestle with myself and like wrestle with my penis and even like make a joke with my wife. Yeah, exactly. And, but I tell my wife too, I'm like, oh, tough. And it's just like she knows how I am, you know. It just shows you how I married the good woman.
So I mean, here's a question, because I mean, like, people, like, before we did the show, like Amanda from MT Orchestra, why, that was weird because I've been on that show a bunch of times. I should, anyway, yeah. So Amanda from MT Orchestra was talking about how like she and her boyfriend are both the same. I think she said that she's a double Taurus and her boyfriend's a double Taurus. Mm-hmm. First of all, when she said that, I didn't actually understand. What is it like if you're a double Taurus?
Okay.
Or I guess they're together a quadruple Taurus, but like if you're a double Taurus, what is that?
Okay. She was talking about, you know, double. When you say I'm double this, double that in astrology, it's like shorthand speak for saying two of your big three astrological placements are in one sign, and the big three astrological placements would be your sun, your moon, and your rising sign. And she was saying that her sun and rising sign are in Taurus, and her boyfriend's sun and rising sign are in Taurus.
Okay, so what would that... So generally, like, in terms of, like, just romantic relationships, if you are... like, are there signs that just go better together? Is there... Like, if let's say two people are of the same sign. Is that a good sign or a bad sign? I mean, is that a good omen or... I'm getting confusing now.
Okay, I know what you're saying. Let me think about this, because it's complex. You know, you've got a lot of different stuff happening within the horoscope, and I find, you know, that there's two. I'll throw out the two big synastry aspects that you want in a relationship that show. Okay, if you want a soulmate relationship, and like soulmate relationships, let me tell you, they're hard. Because it's not like a soulmate relationship is like, I'm not going to be like, oh, everything's all lovey-dovey. It's going to be like, no, I'm going to show you your soul, mate. And in order to do that, like, a lot of ugliness is going to pop up. That person's going to hold your ugliness right in front of your face and being like, here it is. Own your shit. This is your shit. This isn't mine. This is yours. And the two aspects are if the sun and the moon are conjunct, because obviously, you know, it's like, that's like the original heavenly marriage. If Venus and Mars are conjunct or in harmonious aspect, that's a pretty good one. But also I find that sun signs that are opposite are a very soulmate caliber type relationships. And, you know, oppositions are conflict, where if, like, let's say I'm a Capricorn and my wife happened to be a Cancer, but she's not, she's a Taurus. That she's going to bring up the more emotional necessity that Capricorn craves that I don't necessarily crave for myself. And then it's going to be like, oh yeah, eventually it's going to go back and forth until you come to some sort of creative resolution. on some like a new sort of compromise, like something new is going to be formed that the two people weren't expecting.
Huh. That's
because it's like you can only have the same fight so many times until it's like, I love this person. What the hell am I doing?
My my girlfriend's a cancer.
Oh, look at that.
Well, there. So we're actually coming up on the end of our time here. This has been a great... Thank you for coming in. This has been a great conversation. I should mention, you're listening to Radio Free Brooklyn. And if you want to give some money, go to radiofreebrooklyn.com/pledge. You're doing some classes coming up, though I understand that there has been a hitch.
Yes, yes, yes. I'm going to be doing classes. Monthly classes. They were planned to do at Catland, but they're going through some renovations now. And it's either going to be online or some other venue.
But the first one's January 10th?
Yeah, yes. January 10th, correct. And I believe at 6:30, either we're going to do this on the internet or we're going to have another location, perhaps even both. And if you want to know more about it, follow me on Facebook, Frederick Steinman.
And that's FREDICKSTEIMANN, yes?
No, you were off on a few letters. Mercury is about to go retrograde, so I'll give you a pass.
Thanks.
FREDERICKSTEIMANN. Or you could email me, fredxrok@gmail.com.
And we'll also have these links up on our on the descriptive part of this when it goes out as a podcast. So if you're interested, just wait 1 week and all this will be written out for you to copy and paste at your leisure.
And also another thing, I should also promote myself that if anybody wants tarot, astrology reading, reach out to me via those ways as well. I'd love to read for you.
That's great. So what's something, so like if someone was doing their first, because we have 2 minutes left. So if someone was doing their first, actually, since we have 2 minutes left, should I play something? Oh, never mind. I was going to play different music, but I realized that the extra music I brought was for that house spirit question. I never played it, which is just... I'm just going to play it anyway really quietly because I think it's a fun song. So someone's going to their first reading for astrology. What should they bring with them? What should they know? Like, just is it enough to know like your birth date, time, and location? Or do you need to have like a... like? What do you need?
Okay, I would say you go in with the right intention, with the right motivation, and you know, a good way to do it, I think you touched on this before, Cooper, you know, just self-knowledge. I want to go in and learn something more about myself, you know, it's, don't go in with something about, like, oh, I'm going to do it because it's cool, because this stuff has its own, like I said, there's its own structure, tradition, and it's going to humble you and bring you right to your butt. And I don't want to see somebody get smacked on their butt if they don't have to.
That is fantastic advice.
Thank you.
I think that's a very good note to end on. So thank you, everybody, for listening. Tune in next month where I'll be talking to Halsey Snow about channeling and the particular spirit that he channels named Vi Weymouth. And that'll be on the 15th of January. Keep sending your questions to intothedarkrfb@gmail.com and we'll submit those to our research department. And thank you so much. And thank you for coming in. I appreciate this.
This has been a pleasure.
Oh man, pleasure was all
mine. I can't believe an hour went so quick.
Right? Yeah, this has been fun as all get out. Okay, have a good day, everybody. And stay tuned for Why Do We Only Listen to Dead People? Your home is